Former U.S. Senator and Senate Majority Leader George Mitchell was in our region yesterday, speaking at both Albany Law School and Skidmore College. He discussed his new book, The Negotiator, a memoir, and his experience in brokering the historic 1998 Good Friday Agreement to address the conflict in Northern Ireland. In addition to his long and storied career in the U.S. Senate, he's also taken on the task of working to bring peace to the conflict in the Middle East and led the investigation into the use of performance-enhancing drugs in baseball that culminated in the release of what has come to be known as the Mitchell Report. In between his speaking engagements, I talked with Senator Mitchell, who believes that despite volatile situations in the Middle East, there is no such thing as a hopeless situation.
That's right. Ultimately, every conflict comes to an end, and the only question is how long it takes, how many lives will be lost, how much destruction of property there will be. It's not easy to be optimistic now, and I recognize that hostility is very high, hatred even, mistrust. I went to the region after the onset of the Second Intifada, and I chaired an international commission which looked into that. That was hugely violent. Thousands died then. I was there under President Obama at an outbreak of violence in Gaza. It had just ended 4 days before President Obama took office and just a week before I went back to the region. So I've seen it at moments like this. And I recognize it's difficult, and no one can suggest it will be easy, but I think it must be a continuing effort by the United States, led by the U.S. government and others, to try to bring the parties together, because I think that an agreement between Israelis and Palestinians is very much in the interests of both societies. Israel has a successful state. What they don't have is security for their people, reasonable and sustainable security. As we see in the news every day dramatically, the people of Israel now live in high levels of fear and anxiety, and justifiably so. The Palestinians don't have a state. They want one. I believe they're not going to get a state until the people of Israel have reasonable and sustainable security. And I think the Israelis are not going to get that until the Palestinians get an independent, sovereign, non-militarized state, but one that can live side by side in peace with Israel.
We spoke just a day after Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said a Palestinian leader persuaded the Nazis to carry out the Holocaust. I asked Mitchell about the long-term impact of such words.
I'd not heard those words from Prime Minister Netanyahu, so I'm not able to comment on that specifically. But, of course, words make a huge difference. They're weapons in conflict. They're weapons in mobilization. Every society in human history has sought to demonize its opponents and to attribute to them the causes of the conflict. So it has to be overcome over time by the opposite kind of words, the positive, the benefits of peace, the improvement in society that can follow when the energy, effort, emotions, and resources of any society can be devoted to building a society as opposed to engaging in conflict with others.
When you reach, and we'll take Northern Ireland as an example, but when you reached an agreement, a peaceful agreement that has now lasted 17 years, of which you made a point today of saying the jury's still out on that, is always the result that you want to be peace, in the sense of that's the ultimate goal and to understand what that means to the various parties?
I don't think peace is an ultimate goal in itself, but it's a necessary condition for any society to succeed and thrive and to enable its citizens to have reasonable and sustainable, physically secure and productive lives. Peace, defined by some as the absence of conflict, is a condition for that. You can't do it in a society that's torn by violence. People can't lead normal lives. Mothers send their children off to school in the morning not knowing whether they're going to come back. So it is a means to an end, not an end in itself. The true end is, as our Declaration of Independence says, the right of people to the pursuit of health and happiness. And that means, in practical terms, a decent job, a decent home, and most of all, a chance to get your children off to a good start in life.
And you mentioned that the U.S. government helping in the case, say, in the Middle East, to work toward a peace agreement. And you also mentioned cynicism in your remarks, so I will try to check that as much as possible. But it is difficult to think that that is possible when there is such conflict within the institution of government itself.
That's true, and it makes everything we do more difficult. But of course, democracy is a messy process in the best of times. Keep in mind that during the Second World War, a period we now all associate with sacrifice and victory and good things, there was bitter partisan conflict. The decision by the House of Representatives to enter the war in the early 1940s was decided by one vote. So at the time, it seems like the past was free of partisanship. But that's never been the case. It's always been difficult. It's always been rancorous. It's always been dissenting views. Most people look to the past through rose-colored glasses and remember a past that never really was, sort of airbrushing out of their minds the difficulties of the past, while they look to the future with blinders and imagine a future not as good as it's really going to be. That's as old as civilization. It's not just our society. So I think we have to maintain a positive outlook and maintain a positive effort to try to right the wrongs in our society, which remain many. We are not perfect. We have many, many deficiencies in our own society. And yet, the United States, in my judgment, remains still the most open, the most free, the most just society in all of human history, the first true meritocracy where people's lives are not defined by their status at birth, but rather by what they can do with their lives. And we have to make it possible for every person in our society to get the maximum out of his or her talent and willingness to work.
Vice President Joe Biden announced today that he would not be seeking the office of president. You write about Joe Biden in your book, The Negotiator, in talking about a time where you needed one key vote and you got it from Senator Biden. And at the end, you said, Joe, you've got guts. I'm curious as to your thoughts of that type of leadership and that type of person that seems to be so needed now, of what you make of someone who wants to say, I'm happy with what I've done. I want to continue to do it for 15 more months and then see what the next chapter is.
Joe Biden is a very close friend of mine. I think the world of him. We were good friends in the Senate. He does have guts. He demonstrated that to me in the Senate over and over again. More than that, he was a superb legislator. In the Senate, there are what some call show horses and some call workhorses. Joe was a workhorse. He knew how to get things done. He worked with people on both sides of the aisle. Whatever their political views, he was able to understand their positions, to try to accommodate them, to move legislation forward. I learned a lot from and greatly admired him. I think he's done a terrific job as vice president. I fully respect his decision. I have a son of my own, and I cannot even begin to imagine what one goes through with the loss of a son, particularly in Joe's case, of a son with such tremendous promise and hope and a future. So I think every one of us, whether we know or don't know Joe Biden, whether we like or don't like him, ought to have the full respect for his decision, for what he's done, and for what he intends to do.
So in conclusion, are you confident that there is a workhorse out there who can help lead this country?
Yes, the American people have demonstrated a remarkable degree of resiliency. We've overcome many obstacles, far more severe and seemingly insurmountable than those that we now encounter. Just think in your lifetime and mine, in 1968, the Vietnam War was raging. President Johnson withdrew. Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy were assassinated. Riots tore through most major cities. There was a feeling of profound depression and a feeling that the society is coming apart. And yet we recovered, we responded, we improved, and we're a better place now, although still filled with problems, some of which existed at that time. I was born during the Depression, and my parents were among the many who lived their entire lives on the edge of failure. My mother was an immigrant. She couldn't read or write. My father was the orphan son of immigrants. He had no education. He worked as a janitor at a local school. But because of their efforts, and more importantly, because of the openness of American society, I was able to get an education and become the majority leader of the United States Senate. Anything is possible in this country, and I'm optimistic about the future despite the difficulties of the present.
Senator Mitchell, a great pleasure.
Thank you.
George Mitchell is a former U.S. Senator and Senate Majority Leader from Maine. His new book, The Negotiator, a memoir, is published by Simon & Schuster. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.